Welcome to I Totally Pause, the podcast for a deep dive into iconic movies and TV shows from the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm Siobhan.
And I'm Jess.
We have a very special guest today, Jess.
I'm so excited.
I got really excited working on this. So when it comes to our guest, if you're a 90s kid, a real 90s kid, you may not realize how much you've heard his voice over the years. His vocal talent has landed him on cartoons like Life with Louie, Recess. You're going to know him best from voicing Harold on Hey Arnold, which won him an acting award for the Jungle movie. Claps for him. And he's also been in video games like L.A. Noire and Ace Combat. But he doesn't only just do voice work. He's been nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award. And he's been nominated 3 years in a row for a Young Artist Award. I think iconic producer for TV show David E. Kelly, Picket Fences, which is iconic on its own. Now, if you're a true 90s kid like us, that might be something more your parents were into, whatever. But he also starred on Erie, Indiana as Marshall's BFF Simon.
Which was a show I forgot I knew until I looked at your IMDb and thought about it today. Finally,
welcome to the show, maybe our most accomplished guest ever.
I was thinking today, our most iconic guest, easily.
Yes, Justin Shinkaro.
Woo-hoo! Thank you for that fantastic intro. My gosh, are you looking to become an agent? Because I'm looking for a new one.
That was a fantastic intro.
I'm inspired by myself right now. I'm like, damn, that kid
I
cool.
am just here to build you up. That's what this is all about.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here and excited to chat with you about 90s, all the fun projects I've worked on and projects I've got coming up. So
we want to know about them all.
Very cool.
And like a more recent project, I guess, if I can just like jump right in. I was looking at your IMDb today and I saw that you did some voices in The Mitchells versus the Machines.
Yes.
We watched that for family movie night just this past weekend and my entire family was obsessed with it. We loved it.
Super cute movie, right? Just adorable. Mm-hmm. Like so well done.
So yeah, good. I laughed out loud like multiple times and my kids loved it. Like I'm sure we'll watch it 5 more times.
It's adorable. Yeah, they brought me in to do like, I did a lot of the like the little background characters at the school. I played like 20 characters in that
okay.
movie.
That was what I wanted to ask you because you're credited as doing like additional voices and I've seen that like on a lot of actors' IMDb's and I've always wondered like exactly what that means.
Well, that's a great question. So there's a couple things. So additional voices kind of sometimes stands for ADR, like additional dialogue recording. And it depends on like, for the Mitchells movie, it's a cartoon. So they bring me in and I play like a bunch of different characters. Mm-hmm. But for TV shows and films, they have ADR in every episode. So for example, like if you're watching an episode of a TV show and they're in a restaurant and you're watching like the three main actors in that scene, well, all around them, when they're shooting the scene, they have extras. You know, the director calls action and all the other people are sitting at tables and they're talking. But when the director calls action, those people can't speak because if they talk, they're talking over the dialogue of the main characters who are getting paid a lot of money because those are the stars of the show or the movie. Mm-hmm. So I go in when a film or television's in post-production with another group of actors that are like improvisers. We're kind of like improv experts and we put dialogue to all those people in the background. So we create their conversation. So we kind of look, we read lips, we kind of think about what they may be saying depending on the scene. And then we put the voices into their mouths.
That's really cool. That makes so much sense when I listen to you explain it that way, but it would never have occurred to me that they're not like sitting there talking.
Like, right, it's weird. It's like you would think it, but when you're actually on set and there's a big group of people, when the director calls action, those people are silent. They're just pantomiming speak. So they're, and the two or three or four actors that are the main people, they're the ones having a conversation. And sound is so critical when you're shooting a project because, you know, you can totally hear when the sound quality is not very good. So sound is critical. So all the people that are not the most important, they can't talk. So I go in and, as I said, I put dialogue to all those people in the background to bring the scene to life and kind of create the atmosphere.
Is that the same thing as, I saw you're also credited as like a loop group. Is that the same idea?
Same thing. It's exactly the same thing. Yeah. So I do a lot of that. Every film and television show has it. People just don't realize it. It's kind of like a little niche within the voiceover community.
Well, we loved that movie, and that's just
super cute.
One of like a billion things. Can we just, before we get into like, I think obviously Hey Arnold is like the main attraction, but before we get into that, there were some shows that like you, it looks like you just like one or two episodes that we were just wondering if we could ask, and if you have any like interesting memories of doing them, you could tell us about it.
Almost like a lightning round.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's go. Fire off the question. Bam, 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 bam.
Home Improvement.
Home Improvement was awesome. So, I was actually really good friends with Zach, and well, not anymore. God, did you hear what's happening? My gosh, he's beating up his wife or something.
No, Zachary Ty Bryan?
Yeah.
You didn't hear about that?
It I don't think so.
It was in TMZ or in Us Weekly.
I don't know how we missed that. We did a whole episode about JTT, so we read about him.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Zach and I were buddies because he did an episode of Picket Fences before I did an episode of Home Improvement. So we were friends. And then, yeah, I mean, I love working on the show. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was a total sweet dude. Tim Allen, he wasn't the nicest back then, but, you know, he was funny. But the kids were cool. The young one, I didn't really hang out with, but I hung out with Jonathan and with Zach. Actually, a couple things. So Jonathan's girlfriend, I remember, was super hot, and she was way taller than he was. He's little.
Guy, right?
At least at that time, he was probably like 5'1", and she was like 5'7". I remember. I just thought that was funny. And also, so for comedies like Home Improvement, you tape them live on Friday. That's when they bring in the audience. It's a 3-camera shoot. You know, you've got the one camera here, and another camera there. Before, the audience would come in a couple hours before the live taping would begin, and they'd have like a warm-up comedian go and like warm up the audience so they'd be more primed to laugh. And I remember Jonathan like walking across the stage, like getting ready for one of the scenes, and the fans, especially the girls, were screaming, "Yeah, my God, we love you. Oh, Jonathan, blah, blah, blah." And then Zach and the little kid like walked by a few minutes later, and the girls could have cared less.
Like cricket. Oh.
And I felt so bad for the other two guys.
Yeah. Was there like bad blood about that?
Those poor dudes. But whatever.
Oh. Do you think they felt like some type of way about that? Or did it seem like everyone was like,
they didn't say, I mean, they didn't say anything to me. I only worked on the show for a couple of weeks, but I mean, it would affect me. Like imagine.
You would think, right? I mean, he was one of, we did an entire episode. They called him the smart throb, like in the teen magazine.
And I loved him too. Like, I would have been one of those girls that was like,
he was great. He went to Harvard. He's super smart. And
the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He was huge. I mean, he was huge at the time. I remember, I mean, he was massive. He was doing all sorts of movies and everything. Mm-hmm. He was a big star. But yeah, he was a super sweet kid. He went to Chaminade, which is a private school in LA, and I went to Buckley. So we knew each other. I'd never worked with him, but we worked on, you know, I just worked a couple of times on Home Improvement, but he was great.
What about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Yeah, that was fantastic. So Will Smith at the time also was another asshole, but
Yeah. Oh, you never heard that about him? I feel like that's always been like the buzz about him.
He was like a 19-year-old kid who was a multi-millionaire of a star of a TV show. So I totally get it. I've actually heard he's super nice and cool now, but he was a bit of a dick back then. But the star of that episode, who I mean, I was like fascinated with, was Evander Holyfield. So Evander Holyfield at the time was the heavyweight champion of the world. And I'll never forget, like on set, because for sitcoms, you work for 5 days, and then on the fifth day, the audience comes in. So Evander Holyfield shows up for the taping on the fifth day in a full black leather suit. He was like the fucking coolest dude ever. Full black leather blazer, black leather pants. Done to the nines. Yeah. Everybody on that show was super cool except for Will. And yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was a great time.
That's cool. How about Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss? Opposite Tony Danza, total sweetheart. Like
he seems like such a good guy
ever.
I know someone who worked on his talk show and said he was wonderful.
I used to be a high school teacher. Now I own a children's drama studio, but I used to teach high school drama. My husband's a high school math teacher, and we watched that show Teach Tony Danza.
Yeah.
When it was on, and it was just like our hearts broke for him, because you could tell he, like every other high school teacher, like he just wanted to do well. Like he really thought he was going to go in there like Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds and like change these kids' lives. And like, it doesn't happen that way. But he just, like, you could tell his heart was like really in the right place. He seems
sweet. The best. He got a gift because I was a guest, you know, just a guest for that one episode. He got a gift for every guest star on that episode. I mean, like, nobody does that. Nice. I mean, talk about. Just a total mensch, just such a wonderful guy. He was fabulous. The whole cast was great. And actually in the episode I was in, Tommy Lasorda was in, who was a very famous baseball manager. He was the manager for the Dodgers at the time. And so that was kind of fun to meet Tommy. But yeah, Tony Danza, great. Loved the set, loved everybody on it. Super great experience.
Now this is something I'm really excited to ask you about.
Yep.
You were on Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yep.
No, were you a contestant?
No, I was in the cartoon show.
You were in the cartoon show.
I played one of the voices. Was
like, please be a contestant.
That would have been fun. Yeah, I did like I think a season of the cartoon when it came out.
I do remember there was the cartoon too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Sorry, I wish I could have been a contestant.
I was very excited to ask you about voicing Charlie Brown.
Yes.
I am a Peanuts super fan.
Super cool. I did the Get Met commercials. Get Met.
Okay. Yeah.
Remember Charlie Brown? He did those like in the early 90s. So I played Charlie for I think 2 years, maybe 91 to 93. Literally, if your voice changes even in the slightest amount, you're gone. New Charlie Brown. But it was great. I mean, I did all the Get Met commercials.
And you did one of the movies too, right?
I did one of the cartoon movies. Yeah. It was just iconic to be able to play Charlie Brown. That's pretty cool.
Was that do you remember if that was like a long audition process? Cause that's a pretty iconic role.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't actually remember that. That's a good question. I do remember though, cause my mom was kind of my manager as a kid, and I was in LA. I got the job in LA. And I'd done several Get Met commercials for Charlie Brown. And then I was in New York doing a Chips Ahoy commercial. Actually, speaking of 90s, with Matt Lawrence. You know Matt Lawrence?
Yeah.
So I did a 90s commercial and the Chips Ahoy commercial with Matt Lawrence in New York. So they flew me to New York. And then apparently Charlie Brown called my agent, or the ad agency wanted me to come in and record. And the commercial agent's like, well, he's in New York shooting something, so he's unavailable. But then they're like, well, we have another client that can play Charlie Brown if you just want to recast him. And my mom, I don't know how she found out. She found out, and we were in New York, and she like marched me over to the ad agency in New York. And she's like, this is your Charlie Brown. He's here. And I fucking recorded the God new bless. Gig in New York.
Thank God for moms, right?
Yeah,
There's that Jersey Philly hustle, right?
Oh my God. I love that. I played Sally in the musical in college. So we have that in common. We both played Brown siblings.
There we go. We're part of the Peanuts family.
Mm-hmm. That was like my dream role. I've always, since I was a little kid, I've been obsessed with with my theater company, we're going to do the Charlie Brown Christmas. There's like a stage version.
Very cool. Yeah.
It's really cute.
Actually, years ago, I saw in New York off Broadway, there was a Charlie Brown with that guy, I forget his name, Eddie something. He's got three names. He was in American Pie, Eddie something. He was the one.
I know who you're talking about.
He's sort of tall and thin, like a beanpole. I forget his name. Anyway, he did an off-Broadway Charlie Brown. It wasn't a musical. It was a play, which was very good.
Was it Dog Sees God?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
Yep.
I've auditioned for that a few times. They never cast me.
Well, that's cool. It was very good. I like
it. Yeah, it is good. Yeah.
What it was. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. How old are the kids that are in your drama school?
We start at 4 years old. We go all the way up to 17 years old. So it's mostly like 6 to 15 year olds that do the shows.
Very nice. Well, you're probably going to churn out the next big stars, you know, all the best kids in theater.
I can only hope. We'll see.
Well, What's her name? Who's the big star that's the redhead who was in La La Land? You know, super big star.
Oh, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone. So Emma Stone and a friend of mine, well, I don't know Emma, but a friend of mine was in theater with her in Phoenix. She went to like children's theater for she was a little kid all the way up.
And I always get really excited when I find out that like a big star like comes from theater. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I feel kindred when I learn that that's like where their roots are.
Well, actually, who's the boss? Judith Light came from one of our community theaters.
Oh, she
did? That's true. Yeah.
Burlington County Footlighter. She is an alum, and we are also.
Yep.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah. Well, she's brilliant. So the best actors come from theater always.
Do you want to talk about Hey Arnold?
Hey, are we ready? Arnold, come here or I'll pound you.
Oh my God, that was so fun.
Little Harold.
So I watched Hey Arnold regularly, like as a kid. I have many memories of watching Hey Arnold, and it's still, I shouldn't ask, like, what do you think? So let me tell you a story. I taught high school until 2 years ago.
Okay.
And like, one of my last years teaching, one of my students, like a sophomore in high school, was wearing a Hey Arnold t-shirt. And I was like, Hey Arnold. And this kid looked at me and was like, you know, Hey Arnold? You know, Hey Arnold? I'm sorry. I'm an actual 90s kid. Because, you know, I had all these kids who were born in like the 2000s that were like, we're 90s kids. I'm like, no. So it like has had like a lot of staying power. Clearly, what do you think? I mean, there were so many like Nicktoons. What do you think it was about Hey Arnold that has made it like stand the test of time that way?
Great question. That's a great question. I mean, first of all, I think the best cartoons were in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, agreed.
That's it right there. Number one, very important fact. Two, I think, you know, I didn't realize it. Honestly, sometimes I get this question. Well, did you realize, you know, you're working on this great show at the time? Of course, I love working on the show. We were like a family. It was a blast, but you know, you never know necessarily when you're working on a project, the effect it's going to have on people and the staying power. Cause you know, you're working in TV and things can get canceled right away. You just don't know what the impact is going to be. But I do remember, you know, reading the scripts, loving the scripts, thinking these are so well written. We have such a great like cast. We're all friends. And I think that really brought it to life. You know, Craig, the creator, is an amazing animator and writer. The scripts were fantastic. The acting was great. And then rewatching it like several years ago, because I started to realize, wow, you know, people really love watching the show. It does have staying power. That there were such great morals, like in each episode. Like each episode had great morals. I mean, the friends really took care of each other. I mean, there was diversity on the show, like back when, you know, diversity wasn't necessarily a priority in television. So I think it's just had, and the characters are very deep. Like, I mean, some come from abusive backgrounds, some are single parents. You know, Arnold lives with his grandparents. It's not the kind of, the traditional kind of cartoon. It had a lot of depth to it. And I think kids are super smart. They got that. They enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And it had a lot of layers. So maybe kind of it's a combination of all of those things why it has staying power. And of course, nostalgia is so huge. You know, we all we all want to relive our childhood, especially as the world gets more fucked up every year. The 90s were a much better place.
Amen.
Yeah.
I have a question about with recording, because you just mentioned how you're all friends. Did you guys get to ever record together? Or were you always isolated in your own?
Great question. So yeah. So usually when you do a cartoon, you're brought in individually, you work with the director behind the booth and the sound engineer and a couple of the producers, and you go in there and you read your lines and you're in and out in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour max. And it's just you. With Hey Arnold, they would bring in the whole cast and we would read the script from top to bottom.
I love that.
Yeah, I think it was really smart because it, you know, when you're feeding off the other actors, it just helps you be in the moment. Make stronger choices. Also, you know, Craig let us improvise a little bit. So, you know, we were able to kind of bring our own vibe to the characters. And when you're working with the other actors in that moment, there's so much more life that can happen. And it was very unique that we did that on Hey Arnold. It's very rare that happens.
It sounds rare.
Yeah.
I love that. I love you guys all got to be together. That's really cool. So would you record in LA?
Yeah, everything is done in LA. I mean, you know, there's a lot of voice stuff now that's, I mean, it's still, there's tons of voice stuff that's done in New York. And I mean, some stuff's done in Chicago, but yeah, I mean, the priority, most animation is done in LA because all the studios are out here. So we would record in Burbank. There was just a post-production facility that we would go to, you know, every week or so and lay it down once a week. We'd be there for a few hours reading the script top to bottom and then going over individual lines, or if they wanted to do pickups, or we had a song in that episode, Jim, the composer, would come out. We'd sort of practice and all sing together. Yeah, it was awesome.
I was secretly hoping you said you're going to have to like record at Nickelodeon Studios.
Oh yeah.
I was going to ask you a whole lot of questions.
We did. We actually recorded the pilot at Nickelodeon, which was cool. And I've recorded Nickelodeon, but when you get a series on Nick, most of the time they farm it out to one of the post-production facilities they work with. Nickelodeon in Burbank is usually a place where the executives are, the animators are there, you know, drawing, and you go there to audition. So they have like their sound booth for auditioning, their directors are there, but when it actually comes to recording, typically it's done at one of the other post facilities.
I feel like a lot of the conversation about Hey Arnold now, when people look back on it, is like how dark it is for a children's show, but I don't really remember it that way. Like I see what people mean, but I don't remember, like, I guess I wouldn't have because I was a kid, but I don't remember like feeling that way about it. Do you think it was like the intention to make a cartoon that was a little bit darker, or do you think that's just kind of something we've like projected onto it looking back?
You know, one of the guys who was one of the writers and producers was a guy named Steve. What was Steve's last name? I forget his last name. Vixton. I'm sorry, I forgot it, but he was a brilliant writer and he was kind of a dark guy.
Okay.
So he, you know, I know this is a podcast that's going to be out there, but I think it's pretty well known. He had some problems with drugs and alcohol, and you know, unfortunately he passed away much earlier than he should have. So, you know, he was one of the creative forces behind the show. And I think he brought an element to the episodes of stuff that he was dealing with personally. And maybe to some degree, it was a bit cathartic or therapeutic for him to put it in the writing. I don't know. I haven't really thought about that before, but that could be a component. I also think that, you know, Craig and the other writers and directors and producers really, you know, they have such respect for a lot of the cartoons from the 50s and 60s that they grew up on, and music from that era. And they wanted to infuse a lot of that in Hey Arnold. So, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily dark or it's kind of layered and has a lot of depth to it. And it's not just, you know, kind of surfacey, oh, this cute, fun cartoon. It's,
right.
You know, right. As we talked about earlier, it's like families, the different family dynamics, diversity, interesting relationships between friends, you know, a little bit of darkness from probably Steve with what he was dealing with in his life at the time. So things I think that were, I think Hey Arnold was way ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful morals, like, you know, freaking Harold going through shit all the time, every character going through craziness and coming up at the end, learning something and being a better, stronger person out of it.
Yeah. Cool. It's interesting hearing about like the drugs and like things like that, because I was reading, and I'm sure you've seen them too, a lot of like fan theories about Hey Arnold.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have to do with like drugs. Like I was reading, you know, a lot of people think that like the reason that like Stoop Kid never leaves his stoop is because he's like guarding a drug den.
She told me this. She's like very into all these theories.
Mm-hmm. I love it. You're a Hey Arnold conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm. There was one because I can remember the episode with Pigeon Man. And at the end of the episode, they like go up to the roof and it's been like destroyed by like vandals. And then Pigeon Man gets like carried off the roof by his pigeons. And there was a fan theory that he commits suicide in front of Arnold, that he jumps. And so that in the way that Arnold like works that out in his mind is to imagine him like just flying away with the pigeons.
Okay.
Wow. Those are great questions for Craig and the writers. I wouldn't know. I'm just the actor. I'm like, whatever, you know, they send me the script. I read it. I don't know any of that, but interesting. It's possible.
Yeah. You know,
Oh my God. I love the pigeon one. Why did you ruin that?
I know that episode came immediately back to me. Like as I was reading it, there was also a kind of funny theory and it had like, well, I'm not that into The Simpsons. So I didn't understand a lot of like the evidence, but a theory that, hey, Arnold and The Simpsons are in like the same universe. And there were like,
well, you know, Craig Bartlett, who's the creator of Hey Arnold, Craig's wife, Lisa, is Matt Groening's sister.
Yes, that was one of the things that I read.
Cool. Yeah. Matt Groening
but
being
there was
the creator
also
of The Simpsons.
Like,
so
there
they were very,
really
they're very close, obviously.
Do they have the same digits on the hand?
No, it's apparently there's an episode of Hey Arnold with a scene in a police station and there's a wanted poster in the background that looks like Sideshow Bob.
Very possible.
That's the word on the internet.
Animators, you know, animators throw in crazy stuff all the time, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they're kids in their 20s and 30s that grew up watching stuff and they want to like trick people. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about Disney kind of being some soft porn and some of those. For sure, I guarantee that is the case. Without a doubt, they are putting stuff in the sky and they're doing stuff in the background. Like if you catch it, it's a wink and a nod. 1000%, it would not shock me if that's true.
Okay, cool. No. Explain to us what an autograph NFT is.
Yeah. Well, look at that little segue, huh? I like the transition. Thank you. So yeah, let's kind of back up a little bit. Do you guys know what like Ethereum and crypto is at all? Bitcoin or Ethereum?
Oh, yeah, okay. I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Ethereum is like this, there's Bitcoin, which is kind of like digital gold that people bought, you know, a long time ago, people made a fortune. And then there's Ethereum, which is another blockchain. And with Ethereum, people build projects on top of it. It's kind of like, I kind of like to think of it maybe like Facebook, you know, Facebook started out and then there are companies that build on top of Facebook. It's kind of like that with Ethereum. Ethereum is this blockchain and people build companies on top. So NFTs, it stands for non-fungible token. And it's kind of interesting when you think about it. So I kind of like to give this example of, let's say you're going into, first of all, if you have a dollar and I have a dollar, we can buy, that's a fungible token, meaning that we can buy the same cup of coffee. It doesn't matter whether they take your dollar or they take my dollar. It's the same. With an NFT, each NFT is different. Each one is unique. They're all different. So when NFTs launched, they launched a few years ago, but they became red hot in like January and February. They became big in the art world. So there's like a website called niftygateway.com and people started taking their Ethereum that they've owned for a long time, this cryptocurrency, and they've been buying art, digital art. So instead of going into an art gallery and buying a physical piece of art, you go online and you buy a digital piece of art created by a 3D animator, a graphic artist, a painter who's really good at doing Photoshop, and they create this piece of art that can change and you buy it and it's a digital piece of art and it's an NFT. And with an NFT, and by the way, feel free to ask me questions because I know this can be confusing. With an NFT, what's really interesting is attached to each piece of art as an NFT or a piece of memorabilia or an autograph like I'm working on is a smart contract. And so a smart contract is like a digital contract. And instead of having like a physical contract that we would have between us, it's a digital contract and it can say anything you want, which is very interesting because for an NFT, the creator, whoever creates the original NFT, whether it's the artist who creates a piece of art or I do an autograph or something, you get a piece of all secondary sales. Meaning if I create a piece of art or I create an NFT piece of art, you buy it for $100.
Mm-hmm.
I get, you know, let's say $90 or $100 as the artist. And then let's say you go and you sell it to your friend for $200. As the artist, I get 10% of that secondary sale. And let's say you go and you sell it for $300. Now you make the money you sold it for, and I get 10% of that third sale in perpetuity forever. and it's an NFT, so it's digital. So there's kind of like a light beacon that follows it wherever it goes around the world on the internet. So I don't need to track it. It's tracked out there. And whoever buys it, I get a piece of that sale.
Yeah. So is everything digital, or is it like when you get like an autograph, do you get like a digital copy of it, or do you get like also like a physical
copy? It's all digital. So it's really interesting. So if you, I'm working on one right now and talking to a lot of friends that are really interested. So for example, just think of it like this, like, you know, have you ever been to a Comic-Con? A Comic-Con convention? Okay. So you go to a Comic-Con, you want to meet your favorite celebrity, you want to get their physical autograph, take a photo with them, you know, kind of create that personal relationship. Or you go on Cameo, you get like that personalized shout out from some fan that you like, or you get it like a birthday wish for some other buddy. So with this, like, let's say you're at a Comic-Con and you get that physical autograph. That's super cool. You're going to hold that forever and cherish that. But at the same time, that celebrity now can give you a digital autograph, and they're going to sign it on their iPad, or they're going to sign it on their phone. And they could either be a photo that you upload to give to them, like a character photo from a cartoon they worked on, like Harold, for example, or something from Erie, Indiana, or whatever it may be. And then I digitally sign it on top of it, and I mint it as an NFT. So now it's an NFT. So now you have this. That's pretty valuable. Now you can hold that forever, or if you want to sell it and a fan is willing to pay you more, you can sell it. It cannot be forged. It's totally transparent because it's on the blockchain. So when it's minted as an NFT, everybody can see it on the blockchain, meaning if you go and buy it, you can go to the site and say, okay, on May 7th, 2021, I bought that NFT at this Comic-Con, and I know that you're the owner, and that's it. You own it. And I know that if you're telling me you own it and it's not there, you're lying. So I'm not going to buy it. So there's no way to forge it, which is huge, because physical autographs, like 80% of them are forged.
Right.
So these can never be forged. They're digital. And we want to create digital notebooks. So when you get a digital autograph, you can put it in this digital notebook and you can send it to your friends on like Facebook or Snapchat, whatever it may be. And for kids, like young kids, they grew up on computers. Like if you're under 20 years old, you grew up on your cell phone, you're used to buying digital goods. Like they're not interested a lot of times in buying stuff to fill up their house like we are, or at least I am. They're fine collecting digital stuff, keeping it on their phone, keeping it on their computer. So the idea of a digital autograph versus having something physical is totally rational to a younger person. And so this is kind of like the beginning of something brand new.
That's really cool. That makes a lot of sense. I'm sitting here like listening to you explain this, and I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, because every interesting thing I've ever had autographed by a celebrity, I don't have it anymore.
Like, right? Yeah, I mean, it goes in the garage, it goes in a box in the garage, or you lose it or you move or whatever happens. Some people collect them and hold. I mean, I have tons of stuff from when I was a kid that I used to collect. It's gone. I don't know where it is. And that stuff's probably super valuable. I don't know where the heck it is. I had coins, I had rocks, I had autographs. I collected a bunch of shit, but it's all gone. I don't know where I had Michael Jordan shoes. They're gone. I don't know where they are, you know, but if I had all those as digital copies, like digital NFTs, you know, they'd be on my phone. They'd be on my computer. It wouldn't be hard to find them easily. And those things appreciate in value to the same degree as a physical thing. Have it.
That's
more.
Cool. So then like, if I guess this is like maybe a stupid question, but like,
no stupid questions ever.
Thank you, Justin. Yeah. So if I buy the autograph NFT from you and then I sell it to Siobhan, I don't have it anymore. Right.
You don't have it anymore, but here's what's, so people get confused totally. And this is because
it's like digital.
Question.
So you would think you like, could always kind of.
So, and people are like, well, why would I pay for something if I can get it for free? Right. I mean, like, so what? Okay. So I own your digital autograph. I could probably just go on Google and see your digital autograph, and I could tell people why I own that. Okay. And you totally could. But here's the difference. Here's when you start to think about it and be like, well, when you go into an art gallery and you see a piece, or a museum, and you see a piece for $20 million. And then you go into the gift shop and you can buy that same print of it for $25. Well, yeah, you could hang that print on your wall and say, I own that. And some people are going to be like, oh, okay, cool. And you could pretend that you own that $20 million piece, but you don't. And right. also, the more people that talk about that art piece, the more people that talk about that $20 million art piece, the more people that take a photo of it, the more people that share that, the more priceless that $20 million art piece becomes, like the Mona Lisa, right? It becomes priceless. The more people talk about something, the more people share something, the person who owns the actual copy of it, that goes up in value.
Right.
So if you own my digital autograph and I become super famous and there's only a few of my mm-hmm. autograph that are NFTs, becomes enormously valuable to the person that owns it. So yes, you've sold it to Siobhan. She has the NFT, so you don't have it anymore. You could tell people you do, but you don't. And now it's registered on the blockchain so people can see that she owns it.
Okay. That makes sense.
It's confusing. I get it. You know, it takes a while, but
I'm feeling like, very old.
Well, no,
like, you're this not. Is like the first times that I've been like, wow, this new technology. This is
it's
like
wild. And you know what? It's going to, I recommend like start reading about it, start learning about NFTs, because in my opinion, they are going to transform.
Are they doing so many this industries. With baseball cards?
Yes.
My brother was just talking about this. Yep, he was just explaining this to our dad.
Yeah.
And trying to explain, because my dad was like, but you know, my dad grew up in the 50s with like the baseball cards.
Sure.
And my brother was like, but there's like only one. So it's only like the, you know. Yeah.
Well, what made it really big in January was the NBA, the Basketball Association. Mm-hmm. They started a website called NBA Top Shot, which was in conjunction with Topps Cards, like basketball.
Oh yeah, I know.
That's exactly what
right?
it's explaining. Yeah.
And so what they started, the NBA started doing was they started selling these highlight moments, what they call highlight moments, as NFTs, like Kobe going in for a dunk or LeBron James swatting the ball, like a 3-second clip. They were selling for tens of thousands of dollars as NFTs. People made a fortune and they're still buying them. So that was kind of the kickoff to this. And now Major League Baseball's in it, you know, football, the NFL's getting into it, and every industry is going to start having them, because what's really interesting about NFTs, a lot of things are, but two main things to me are, one, you empower the creator. Whoever created that NFT, like as an actor, when I do a voiceover, I get residuals, right? So, mm-hmm. Hey Arnold, I get a little bit of residuals every time it plays. Very little, but I get something. Mm-hmm. It's a nice thing about being an actor, because when you're not working, you need residuals to help you mm-hmm. keep the lights on. Otherwise, you'd have to go get another job. Now, acting is one of the few forms of art that has residuals. If you're a painter, you don't get residuals. You sell that piece of art once, a collector buys it, sells it to another collector. You're not getting a piece of that secondary sale. Same with, you know, baseball players.
Remember like back in like, I guess the early 2000s, that was like Garth Brooks's issue with like used CD stores.
Yeah.
Which I remember at the time thinking he was a jerk. And I still kind of think that, because he's like a billionaire, but hearing
he's a billionaire, right. But you kind of get the idea of like, well, hell, the guy's the creator of it. Everybody's making money. He should get a piece of it. He originated, he's the originator of the IP. So what this does is it gives all the power to the creator, because if you create a piece of art, a piece of memorabilia, a voiceover, you know, whatever you create, if a fan buys it and then sells it, you're having a piece of all those secondary sales forever. That's cool. Amazing.
Yeah.
Here's the other really interesting thing from the fan's point of view. So you're a fan, you buy this piece of art. First of all, buying a physical piece of art and trying to sell a physical piece of art on the secondary sale is extraordinarily hard. It's so easy to buy a piece of art in a gallery. Good luck trying to resell it. Like very, very few people can. The market is quite liquid in the NFT market. So there's a lot of fans that will go and buy something. Has to be something cool, obviously, of something that people want. But there's a market out there for reselling these NFTs. So the fan, you can go there out there, you can support your favorite creator, you buy it, and then you can go and sell it for a higher value, potentially, not always. You can go and sell it for a higher value, and you don't have to worry about going on eBay and trying to sell it mm-hmm. or, you know, or somebody is going to buy it thinking that it's fake or full of shit or it's been forged. It's authentic. It's, you can go see it on the blockchain that it's actually been registered. You can tell who bought it. So you can't forge it. So the fan can make money, go and sell it. Super cool. Then you have these things, which I talked about, are these smart contracts, these contracts that are attached to the NFT that can explain anything. So the main thing about NFTs is getting rid of the middlemen, creating a relationship between the creator and the fan. Forget the middlemen. The middlemen in every industry takes 25 to 50% cut, right? They put the artist, they put the fan together. I'm talking in every industry, there are middlemen. Lawyers are middlemen. Insurance people are middlemen, you know? Agents for actors are middlemen. They're middlemen. You know, they're fine. They do their job. But NFTs are a contract that, and it's attached to this NFT. It's the creator. A fan buys it. It's a contract. There's no reason for the middlemen anymore. So it's going to change so many industries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Super interesting.
So like for your podcast, like you could think about NFTing your podcast. Like you come on, you have a cool episode like with me or somebody or whatever. You NFT your podcast, you put it on one of these NFT marketplaces, and your fans could buy that episode and NFT that up. You could NFT it. They could buy the episode for, you know, whatever you want to sell it for, $50, $100, $200, $1,000, $5,000, you know, and that helps you for your revenue to make more episodes. It makes your, it creates a better relationship with your fans. So you have kind of these super fans that are really love you. And then that fan who buys that your podcast episode, maybe down the road, they can sell it for a higher price to another fan and you get a piece of that sale.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So well, if someone someone wanted to buy your autographed as an NFT, where could they go?
Yes. So they thank you. So they're going to go to hashink.app, hashink, H-A-S-H-I-N-K with a K at the end. Instead of INC, it's INK, like a pen, hashink.app, APP, and you'll see it. I actually joined this hackathon about a month and a half ago, and our team won. So we're creating these new NFT autographs. So I'm launching with my first one. It was supposed to launch May 13th, which was so sweet of you guys to bring me on and we could chat about this, but technically we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. So it's going to be pushed back a little bit, but when it is going to be launched, I will let you know.
Yeah. And that gives us more time to edit this.
Perfect. You got time.
We're slow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slow editor.
Thank you. So it'll be a little bit later. And then I've already gone out to several friends of mine, a friend of mine who was the original Power Rangers. He's done a digital NFT, Walter Jones, a friend of mine, Cam Clark, who's the original He-Man. And one of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's done one. Debbie Derryberry, who's a huge, amazing cartoon actress, brilliant. She was everything. I mean, she's done everything. So I've already got like a list of friends that have done some NFTs. So we're going to start rolling them out and kind of seeing if fans are interested in buying them. And then we're going to look at like the Comic-Con market and maybe see if we can go to some of these Comic Cons to meet fans, talk to some of the actors there, and start talking about releasing their NFTs as autographs.
You do well at a Comic Con.
I think so too. Yeah, if you do Comic Con in New York, you'll have to let us know. We'll come see you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh my God, I'd love to. Yeah.
That's really cool. So, where can folks find you, like on the socials?
You gotta find me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm doing a little bit of TikTok, but I'm not so, TikTok takes so much work.
I'm trying to get Siobhan on TikTok so bad. It's my favorite.
I love TikTok. It's fun. I mean,
I'm more of a TikTok browser, but then like a creator, but I'm like dabbling.
Okay. All right. Well, then I got to follow you too. Mm-hmm. And you got to stay consistent with all your socials, right? I mean, that's the thing. You got to be creating content all the time, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's like,
TikTok is like, it's freaking time consuming.
Yeah. It's super.
I had a TikTok a couple weeks ago, get like picked up by the algorithm. It got like 2000 likes in like a day.
So
it was about my daughter who's 5 and obsessed with Taylor Swift, but like it's just her. I don't know. It takes forever to make them. And then you don't know what's going to like resonate.
You don't know what's going to hit. Yeah. Like my buddy, Adam, Adam Wiley, who was on Picket Fences with me. He played my little brother and he's great. He did an NFT for me too. He's a total sweetheart. He's blown up on TikTok. He's got like 3 million followers, but he shoots like 5 or 6 of them a day. I mean,
who has the time? And they're hard to edit.
You got to edit it. Yeah. He like writes out scripts. He's super committed. He's doing a fantastic job, but I mean, that's what it takes to be successful. I don't have the brain power to do it. Find me on Instagram.com/JustinShankro, twitter.com/JustinShankro. I'm there doing, you know, sometimes stupid, funny videos, commenting on crazy stuff that's going on in the world, and talking about NFTs, doing Hey Arnold, talking about Erie, Picket Fences. I'm working on a new Marvel cartoon right now, which I'm excited about, which is a blast. And it's just fun. Yeah. So, you know, check me out on the socials and find out what's happening with Hey Arnold.
I wonder how long we'd have to talk to you for that to get old. I don't know. I kind of want to go back and do an Erie, Indiana rewatch now. Maybe we can do that at some point. You can come back and talk to us about it.
Yes, Erie is great. Watch it. It's on Amazon Prime right
now.
It is.
I was going to ask you, do you know if it's streaming anywhere?
Yes, it's streaming on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free. It's, I mean, I watched it probably about 6 months ago. It holds up. It's Does great. It?
I just so saw fun. A YouTube video saying exactly that it
yeah. Erie was so ahead of its time. Hi. It was, you know, X-Files was inspired by Erie. Stranger Things, obviously super inspired by Erie.
Okay. We'll have to do that. When we're done with our music movies, we should get into TV shows. And we
I did have one question.
Please.
Do you own anything that could be a contender for the Erie Museum of the Weird?
That's a great question. You know, I have, you mean from Erie or just in general, something
not just in general, but if it's from Erie, even better.
Well, I wish I had stuff from Erie, like Carl, who's one of the creators of Erie, Carl and Jose, two brilliant writers. Carl has the King Kong that was in The Lost World. He has that in his writing office, which is super cool. I just have like an Erie jacket that like they gave the cast, which is fun. But in terms of something that would be good to put into the Erie, like weird kind of, you know, our little cubby hideaway that you would have found in Erie, Indiana. That's a great question. What do I have that's weird?
Do you have anything weird, Siobhan?
Yeah, that's a good, yeah. Really. What about you? Let's turn the question on you. What would you put in the Erie Weird Museum? I don't believe that.
It's too boring. I don't think I have anything. Yeah, other than like tarot cards and that's it.
Yeah, tarot cards would be good. What's that game that you play like where the thing moves on its own?
Ouija
board. Mm-hmm. I have a Ouija board that would go in there. Thing is scary. I've only played it once, but I'll never play it again. It's real.
My brother and I used to play it and we were like terrified of it.
It's terrifying.
But you absolutely can't put terrifying. It down.
Yeah. I have that. That would definitely go in the Erie Weird Museum. Actually, I know. A couple Halloweens ago, a friend of mine, she and I dressed up as the twins from The Shining.
Oh.
And we have a great photo that's super weird and dark. That would go in,
okay. in
for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Well, you can't get any better than that.
Yeah. Oh, I have a question for you guys. So one of the things also about NFTs that's interesting is that, as I said, there are these, it's a contract, right? So with the contract, you can write whatever you want, and NFTs can unlock special privileges for a fan that buys the NFT. So for example, Kings of Leon, the band, recently released their NFT as a new out as their new album as an NFT. And if fans bought it, it gave them the power to be able to get backstage to meet them. It gave them the power to get first in line when they come to their city to be able to buy tickets. It unleashes like all these special giveaways that you can attach to the NFT because it's a contract. You can program it to whatever you want.
Right.
So my question is, you know, in addition to just buying a digital NFT as an autograph, which is cool on its own merit, what if you could attach like special privileges to it for the fan, where you could create like something where you could unlock special privileges for the fan with that celebrity? Would that be?
Yeah, I think that's the key. Yeah, that would be awesome.
So like, I think so too. Like what would be cool to you? Like what would be cool if you're like, all right, I'll pay $50 for this digital autograph that's an NFT, but what do I want to get with that would bring me closer to the celebrity? Or what?
What's something like a cameo could be one
that's
thing.
What I was just thinking, something like a cameo. We're a big, we always buy each other cameos for our birthdays. We're a big fan of like that whole
yeah
the whole thing.
Yeah. Or like so a tweet or like something, you know.
Like a social media shout out maybe, especially because you probably have like a lot of followers, right? So if someone's like a fan of yours and they're trying to like build their social media, maybe like a shout out in your story.
That's a good idea. Yeah. 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 But, I mean, that's a big ask for somebody who's huge because,
right.
You know, like Walter, for example, I mean, I don't have that many followers. I've got like less than 2,000, but Walter, who's the Power Rangers, he's got over 250,000. I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Right. Spend more than.
I was just thinking when you said about Kings of Leon, it was thinking, like you get to meet them. How much do you pay for that? That's like
thousands.
A big.
Thousands. Yeah, I was gonna say that. Yeah, that's a lot.
Oh yeah, some of these NFTs are selling for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands.
Well, I just saw somebody on. She's on 90 Day Fiance, and she was charging people $300 for her to follow them. So
what?
Charge crazy things for just something as simple as
sometimes when I browse through Cameo, I find myself thinking like, I don't think these people are as famous as they think they are. Like when you see like what some people charge on Cameo, that's wild.
I know. I actually just got on Cameo. It was actually sweet. Somebody asked me this morning. They were like, our daughter who's 10, it's her birthday and she's a big Eerie fan. So will you give her a shout out and talk about some special moments? So I did.
Oh, that's great. So cute.
Which super
that must
cute.
Be so awesome to have like a 10-year-old be like.
And they must've been in London or in England because they said, this is from Mummy and Daddy. And Mummy is like, or Canada.
It's like
maybe.
An English thing.
But,
yeah,
but
oh
I think
my
it's
God,
very
that's
English.
Cute.
Super cute. See? Yeah.
It stands the test of time.
I think Tina would like it. When we rewatch it, my son is 8. He would probably, and he's in like, that kind of thing.
Heck yeah. Show him Erie.
Yeah,
he'd love
it. Like it.
He would. Right. He would like Hey Arnold, I think, too. And has not been the case. Like, I've shown him some 90s cartoons and I've been like really disappointed with like how uninterested he was in them. But I think he would be into Hey Arnold. Like, I was really excited to watch Doug with him and he was like, what is this? not at all.
All right. Show him Hey Arnold. I want to report back to see if he
I will
liked it.
Let you know. I bet he'll like it. I bet he will because it's a little bit darker and because he likes things that like speak to him like a person and not like a baby, which I think.
Sure. You know, okay. You want to hear a funny story about Harold, my character had a bar mitzvah on Hey Arnold. Do you remember the bar mitzvah episode?
No, but I'm really excited to know Harold was Jewish.
Heck yeah. Of course he's Jewish. You didn't know that?
The tribe. I'm super pumped.
Harold episode. Was chosen. He was a chosen, cartoon. So I'm Jewish. So Craig, the creator, was not Jewish. And he comes to me. I just recently had my bar mitzvah. And he said, I want to have Harold have a bar mitzvah. I think he was kind of inspired by the fact that I had a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to have Harold have a bar mitzvah, but I'm not Jewish. And I don't quite know the prayers that he would say during the reading of the Torah. So I'm like, okay, Craig, I got this, dude. I'll hook you up. Well, I was like, not very religious. So when I had my bar mitzvah, I pretty much was like reading the English portion. I was always skipping Sunday school to go to auditions. One of my best friends was Orthodox. So I call him up. I'm like, Danny, listen, I need some prayers because my character is going to read some prayers and I need to give this to Craig, the creator. And he's like, all right. So he gives me all the prayers. I give the prayers to Craig. We record the episode. The episode comes out. Danny calls me on the phone. I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? You said the wrong prayers. What are you talking about? He's like, you're reading the Torah and you're doing the prayer for the wine. I did all the wrong prayers.
Oh, he gave them to you, though.
But can I hear you say something in Hebrew as Harold?
Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kadoshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, v'hadlik ner shel Hanukkah. How's that?
Excellent.
Officially what we're playing on Hanukkah in my house. I no longer need to say the blessing. Fantastic.
That's right.
Oh my God, that was so funny. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go check out that episode. It's a great, great, great
episode. That's going to be the one that Duda and I watch first.
Perfect. There it is.
Where can we stream Hey Arnold? I've been looking. It's on Hulu, I think.
I think it's on Hulu. I know it was on, I think it was on like Nick for a while. I don't, actually, it's a good question. Let me I don't know where the heck it is.
The kids must find someone.
I totally paused if one of my kids didn't interrupt. So
what's happening?
You say hi, baby. You say hi to Siobhan.
Hi.
That's Hello. Justin. You say hi, Justin. I'm going to show you a cartoon that Justin. Hi. Justin.
Yes.
Did a voice. He was one of the voice actors in The Mitchells and the Machines.
Yep.
Yeah, The Mitchells and the Machines, the movie we just watched with the family and the robots. No, yeah. Yeah, I was telling him we really liked it, right? It was a good movie. Yeah.
We're having our play date right now.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, it's cool? Our play date time.
I'm surprised during your play date there's no wine that's involved.
Sometimes.
Okay. Oh, some beer.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Good, 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 good. Yeah. Essential. Very cool.
Can you close my door so Puffer doesn't come in? Thank you.
Very cute.
Bye, honey. Close the door, please. I almost hit the bait before we started. And then I was like, no, let me just stay. More likely what goes on before the play date.
Very cute. Very cute. So yeah, that's my world.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
This was so fun. When we do our Erie, Indiana rewatch, you're going to have to come back and talk to us more about that.
Yeah, I definitely want to watch some of that. That'd be so much fun.
Watch Erie, ping me. Let's do an Erie rewatch, an Erie talk, discussion about some episodes and
I want some Joe Dante stories.
Oh, Joe is great. Yeah. Yeah. Joe.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear about him.
He's a character.
I am sure. From-
He is for sure a character.
Yeah. Well,
I just spoke to Omri recently. So we'll talk about that too.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you, Justin. This was a delight.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Siobhan. Thanks for bringing me on. Thanks for allowing me to talk about NFT autographs and Herald.
That was so interesting. Thank you for educating us.
Of course.
Yeah. If you guys have any more questions, just send us a message and we'll get them.
Yeah, we'll pass them along.
Okay. Awesome.
So,
you guys rock.
Thank you.
A little goodbye. Bye.
Okay.
Arnold, I'm signing off.
Bye.
Bye.
If you want to find us on the socials, as always, we are at Totally Paused Pod on Instagram. I am at Jess Paused Pod on all the socials.
I am at Sayo Monroe on all the socials.
And we're
outie.
Outie.